Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of the Red Men Weekly podcast. My name's Steve Hall, bringing you the best clips from our Red Men Plus shows from the previous week. Say it all the time on this show, but yeah, if you want these shows in full, plus much more content, including our documentaries, Roberto Firmino, documentary series, Bobby Firmino, The Best in the World, episodes all streaming right now on Red Men Plus. Simply head on over to redmenplus.com and sign up and you'll get all these shows in full, both in video and podcast forms. And like I say, you'll be able to watch episodes 2 and 3 of the Bobby Firmino documentary. Episode 1's available for free on YouTube right now as well. If you want to go and check that out before you make your minds up, then go and do that. That was not a problem at all. Right then, let's get started with this week's clips. First up was the Biased Transfer podcast. Paul Machen hosting Chris Pajak, Chloe Bloxham and Dan Clubb. And they had a big old chat about Pep Guardiola and Manchester City and just how they go about churning their squad each and every summer. Pep knowing exactly when to sign and when to let players go. So yeah, have a little listen to that.
Gundogan looks like he's going to Barca on a free.
For that.
Thank Christ. That's a... Like, low-key, it's a huge loss for Man City, that. It's underrated.
Captain as well.
Yeah, but he's just...
So good.
Loads of really important goals. Like, Erling Haaland, again, no one talks about it. Rubbish at the end of the season. Mm. Actually rubbish. Gundogan's goals is what got them to effectively to the silverware that they got them to. But if you're going to sort that out, bringing Mateo Kovacic in for straight away without even batting an eyelid, I think is... like might be some of the smartest business that
he's really good and really underrated. Kovacic, like every time I watch him play, I think
of course random big goals.
Yeah, he does. He's not. I don't think he's as good as Gundogan.
No, but
I don't think many players are. And Pep will improve Kovacic. I mean, Kovacic has managed to be good in spite of the coaching that he's had over the last 3 or 4 years, which is just saying something. At Chelsea, they've been a fucking shit show. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? He's going to go in there and he's going to be really good, Kovacic, and it's really annoying to be honest with you.
Yeah, Ilkay Gundogan last 3 seasons, 17 goals in 2021, 10 goals in 21-22, 11 goals in all comps.
And not one before March.
Not one before the quarter final time of the Champions League and beyond.
Like, prolific.
Absolutely ridiculous.
What a footballer, then. He's extremely underrated.
Just quickly, to add on that, Dan, Mateo Kovacic, if you're going to go out and get someone again, it's just about in his prime still. But as far as plug and play things go,
yeah, relatively seamless. Yeah, a player who I really like watching, to be honest with you. Unfortunately for us, he's turned up mostly against Liverpool, much like N'Golo Kante. Actually, he seems to save his best performances for when he comes up against us. So yeah, I think very smart for Man City. Like, credit where credit's due. Don't like giving them any credit really. Haven't even credited him for the treble yet. But yeah, very smart business. Again, I think we've all alluded to it. He's not quite Gundogan 2.0 in terms of we've never seen him score the amount of important goals.
Scores a couple of goals a season.
Yes, exactly. But in a much better team who will be competing at the business end of trophies and stuff like that, maybe he will become that because I think he has everything it takes to do that. I mean, again, we've seen that goal he scored against us, didn't we, in the 2-2 when he brought it back to what a goal that was. You know what I mean? He's got that sort of thing in his locker. But yeah, I think the Gundogan loss still feels like a significant one because he's played a huge role for them. I mean, he's hurt us enough times as well down the years with his final day goals and stuff. So I am still happy that he's gone and slightly pessimistic about the fact that he seems to have just replaced him instantly.
If they could get rid of Bernardo Silva, that'd be brilliant as well. Add him on, him and Gundogan leaving would be massive for us. However, they'll go and pluck, like you mentioned, Kovacic, Declan Rice, and some unbelievable left footer from somewhere.
Like he's gone by another South American lad who's the best thing you've ever seen, and no one talks about him. It's just frustratingly annoying. I was really hoping to have you. Oh yeah, Gundogan's gone. That's good. Good. Oh, it's all right. Fair enough. Yeah, go ahead. It's fine.
And just Gvardiol, play for the next season. What? They've agreed terms with Gvardiol. Which
that's
is just
the one.
Absolutely sensational because they need another.
I just get the feeling with Man City, they got those charges hanging over their heads. So
by now,
good to this, but you know, but more like.
Let's do everything we
It's either all going to come apart or nothing's going to happen. Yeah. If it all comes apart, what's the point in taking the foot off the gas now? And if they're going to get away with it, then who gives a fuck? You carry on doing what you're doing. And moreover, if they get away with it, they can get away with anything. Because if they can manage to swerve 115 charges on the back of what they managed to get away with from UEFA, because of the time barred stuff, then why not? Why not just continue to fill your squad with do that thing of everyone always talks about it. You two world class players for every position. City are going to be the first club to actually be able to do that because why wouldn't you? Mm. If there's no one to tell you no, why wouldn't you just go and buy a load of established world class players?
The mad thing is, I agree with you, right? But the mad thing is, he doesn't play that many players, Guardiola.
No.
It's like, yeah, I think it's about 16 lads. He really relies on it, but I'm sure it's less than Klopp.
Mm.
Like he really just goes to town on those top lads, and then what he does well is he realizes when he's overplayed them, just gets rid and just moves to the next one because he's just using them for a short period of time. Get the absolute fucking best of them and gone. See you later.
Isn't it mad how they've just got Phil Foden, who's one of the greatest young talents that I've ever seen. Just not even playing for them. Just chilling on the bench, hardly doing anything. He comes on in the final.
So relaxed. They can afford for him to have like organs just removed in the middle of a season and let him crack on with stuff like. You know what I mean?
Doesn't play. Kevin De Bruyne needs to come. It's okay because we've got Phil Foden to come back on. Not the same level of player, but my God, Phil Foden is incredible, and you wouldn't mind him as a player on your football pitch. It's ridiculous.
Cancelo was. Boss for them, and then gone.
When they got rid of him,
like, what?
The thing with that was he was at his peak for Man City when he left. Yeah. He was like, "What's going on there?" It was so odd, but he just obviously knew something was coming down the line. I wonder if it's an attitude thing there as well, perhaps.
Okay.
But you're right. His churn and his ruthless nature of football is second to none.
You think
like,
about
I
know Laporte. Is Laporte still there?
Yes.
Laporte was the centre back then. Ruben Diaz was the centre back. Before that, it was John Stones. Then John Stones is the centre back again.
Mm.
And it's like, how does he do that? I've got no idea how he does it.
How he does it is that's the point. He can afford to fuck people off, and he can afford to continue to spin on £50 million footballers until he gets the right one. And if they don't, they'll just go out and buy the established one for £100 million instead, and live with that. And that's where they get away with it. It's mad. And there are a couple of things that when you're at the peak of your powers, you seem to be able to make mad tactical or selection things and get away with it. Fergie had this for years. My running joke was that everyone was playing Football Manager 2012, and he was playing Chapman 2, where you set your formation, you set attacking, and you press go. And that's all the tactical implementation you need in your side. Everyone else is using incremental 50-bar sliders. And he's done that with that left-back thing for years, like getting away with Fabian Delph at left-back and Nathan Ake.
Zinchenko was the left-back, wasn't he? Like, and, you know, it was the... Was it Mendy?
Mendy was the left-back,
You know, and just... But the thing that I find interesting is that, like, I get the money side of things, but it's how he's a coach doesn't seem to have a drop-off from the players when they do change. That's the thing that gets me. It's like, that's where I don't understand it because, yeah, you can spend money on players and they don't work and, you know, you're afforded that ability through the amount of money they spend, but he very rarely gets it wrong when the player comes in.
Mm.
They are just good enough, at least for what he needs in the short term, and then he'll fuck them off again. It's madness.
Unless they play at fullback.
He's had some misses. Angelino was a bad miss at left back.
Then he goes on to have a box career, and then they bring him back, don't he?
Yeah. He had a nightmare against us, didn't he, in that one Anfield game? I seem to remember he had a horrid time. Like
you forget, though, you do this. Well, again, that's what happens when the sun's shining. You forget the mistakes.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter, because look at the successes that he's delivered, and that's forever the difference. It's never even about the spending the big money. And that's the most annoying thing about it now, is they're doing both now. They were keeping it under the radar. They never used to go and break transfer records because they don't want that kind of eyes on them. And now they don't give a fuck. they'll go and buy all the biggest stars. They're gonna continue to do that now, because why not? Because actually, what Man City need now, they've got all the trophies, they need fans. So actually, they need to go and buy marquee footballers, because marquee footballers bring their own audience with them. That's why they were interested. They wanted Ronaldo a few years ago, because Manchester United needed Ronaldo because they needed a player. Man City needed Ronaldo because they needed millions more people to come and watch Manchester City. They wouldn't have even needed to play him. They wouldn't have been asked for all of that. That's why they tried for Messi as well and all those kind of things.
The other thing about City is that like they can afford to get things wrong because players who they buy don't go down in value. They just don't.
Chelsea had that as well. Yeah. Like you spend big and somehow just being
four years later means that you get
to buzz. Yeah, that's something that Liverpool have been very smart in how they've moved stuff on. But actually, we're very good, I think, at moving on younger players and getting good value for them. We haven't got lots of Felipe Coutinho is probably the greatest counterpoint I'm about to make, but
we don't really move them on.
We buy players and keep them. Yeah.
Gini Wijnaldum and Bobby Firmino recently. Yeah. You know what I mean? Sadio Mane was towards the end.
The other thing is, like, I remember when Sterling went to Chelsea, and I was like, "What are you doing? What are you doing? He's been pivotal for you. He's fell off a cliff. He's been awful, and they got good money for him. And whilst all of the other people were like, oh, you know, finally they've got rid of someone who's unbelievable. It was like he already knew, I've got the best out of him now.
Ferguson had that
at
his pump as well. He knew when to sell a player just as he were cresting the hill. Yeah.
You know what we need?
And he wasn't even worried that he'd gone to a potential rival, because the season before that, everyone was like, Chelsea's going to challenge City. It's not going to be Liverpool. And out of nowhere, we were there. And like, they let him go to a direct rival.
But there's also a thing, it's a mentality thing. Actually, you're leaving Pep, who's this super intense individual, and a lot of them don't really like a lot of the stuff because it is so intense. But actually, when you're on the outs, what does that say? That says you're not good enough for me anymore. Yeah. And this is the Arsenal's thing. Arsenal were trying to compete against Man City, and their two best players were Man City rejects in Gabriel Jesus and Zinchenko. The linchpin of how they tactically set up was Zinchenko playing on that inverted fullback thing, and he's just basically been. Patch come down, all right, fine. We'll have it, do you, mate?
But when you're a manager, that's exactly the same.
Yeah. But the worst, come and do the worst version of it. Yeah, and that the psychology that follows you out the door, Pep's happy to let them go. Because really, he's sending them with a message. He's sending them with a fucking like a tag. Yeah. Told them not good enough. Defective stamp on the forehead. Out you go. Not good enough to keep up with what I'm doing anymore.
Right. Thanks very much to Paul and the team for that one. Interesting conversation had by all. Next up then, expert insights, or even transfer insights, Sam. Call it whatever you want. Let's go with transfer insights. Sasha Tovaleri. It was reported, of course, that Liverpool's interest in Romeo Lavia of Southampton was legitimate, according to Fabrizio Romano. A few weeks ago, we spoke to Sasha about this, and he reported that at the time. We went back for another episode with Sasha, and again, he doubled down on that. He did say Liverpool's interest is genuine. He's a Belgian football journalist, for those who don't know who Sasha is. Here's what he had to say to Dan on this week's Transfer Insight.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Red Men TV. My name is Dan Club. I will be your host for this episode of Transfer Insight. And I'm delighted to say I'm joined again a couple of months after we spoke last by the brilliant Belgian football journalist Sasha Tavalieri. Sasha, how are you doing, mate? You good?
Hi, yes, I'm really good. I'm really happy to be with you again.
Yeah, good man. Pleasure to have you on again, of course. Really enjoyed our conversation last time, so let's do it all again. And we're here to speak about the same footballer, a compatriot of yours, of course, current Southampton midfielder Romeo Lavia. Now, last time we spoke about Liverpool's interest in him. I think you said the interest was concrete. And just yesterday, I think it's fair to say it ramped up a little bit. Obviously, we had Fabrizio Romano talking about it, you yourself talking about it as well. So as things stand, Sasha, you tweeted yesterday that there's going to be a huge fight for Romeo Lavia. You mentioned Liverpool's working relationship with Southampton could help us do the deal. You said Chelsea have wanted him for a long time, something you mentioned last time we spoke, actually. And Arsenal have also sort of got a good relationship with the agent that could help them. So what is the current situation as things stand?
For the moment, what I can say, and it's the news, we can say that Liverpool is going ahead with the profile. They are still interested. They kept contact with the entourage of the player, and they announced their intention to make an offer this summer. So this is something quite quite concrete and huge. Of course, as I told in my tweet yesterday, there are contacts with Southampton that can really help on the deal. But the fact is that the concurrency for the moment with the Arsenal is really huge, because I don't know if you know it, but there is a close relationship between the player, the agent's player, and Arsenal that is going through for years, and is even more deeper since the renewal of our friend Bukayo Saka. From Arsenal. So this is a problem, because we are expecting that when the player decides to go somewhere for first, that is where he will sign. And for the moment, we are not absolutely not talking about this. He didn't say that he wants to play for Arsenal. This is important to signalize, but it's becoming a fight between these two clubs, because I guess Chelsea were there. They were in advantageous position. It was really important for them to be there, and they loved the player from the longest time. The player also talked to his entourage to the fact he wants to play, and he could play for Chelsea and so on. But fact is that Chelsea is going to go a bit everywhere, and they are losing time for this case. And the fact is that I guess Romeo Lavia won't wait a lot of time, because he wants to make his preparation. Mm-hmm. He wants to be ready really quick, in sort of, again, being able to make things in his new team. And his new team won't be definitely Southampton. So he has to choose, and he has to get the choice. There are something that is playing a bit, I will not say against, but that is playing for Arsenal, is the fact that they play Champions League football. This is really important for him. And there is something that also I think will play for Liverpool, is that they have nothing more to sell as a player to go directly getting a deal with Southampton. And this is important, because Chelsea needs to sell. They like the player, but they have a sort of scheduling on the transfer window that will make them a bit going lower on being concrete on the fact. They kept information about Southampton to know how to make the deal. It's the same for Liverpool, but Liverpool can be really quick, because they don't have a lot of things to do. They make the big work for the midfield earlier, so they are ready to make an offer. So in terms of time, I mean. So this is really important. And the fact is that they were a bit disappointing about the Barella case, because they were thinking that it was possible for them to bring him, and he said no. So it was a bit disappointing for them. So they say, okay, let's make a young star of Premier League on the team, and trying if it's possible to reach a deal. So that's the situation right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You're interested. You mentioned Barella there. I actually got a message yesterday from an Italian journalist who said that Barella had essentially chosen to stay at Inter Milan, which is no huge surprise. You know, I think he loves Inter Milan. He's an Inter Milan fan. I'm not shocked by that decision, let's put it that way. And you mentioned there Liverpool could be ready to make an offer at some point, because as you say, we haven't got loads to do. The main focus is the midfield. Have there been any offers yet for Lavia, as things stand, from Liverpool, Arsenal, or even Chelsea? Has anyone made a bid yet?
They say they will make an offer, but they didn't make it factually. So formal offer hasn't been done for the moment, but everyone is confident that it will be the case. If it's not this week, it will be next week. This is something really concrete. And as I told you, fact is that the relationship between Arsenal, between Liverpool and Southampton, will make the things a bit more smooth. For a conversation. So talks have already been done, but a formal offer, I cannot confirm it.
No, okay, fair enough. You mentioned a moment ago it could be a race between Arsenal and Liverpool potentially. Now, with Arsenal, they look like they're going for quite a few different midfield options. Obviously, we know about Declan Rice, Moises Caicedo is still in there. And it feels like they could be waiting for something to happen with Thomas Partey as well in terms of outgoings. Do you think that could impact them pursuing Romeo Lavia? And also, Do you think it could impact Lavia's decision? Because you said a moment ago, like, Champions League could play a part in this. But he's someone so exciting, so talented, and he's played so much football for Southampton already in the Premier League. He's going to want first-team football, isn't he, you would imagine?
Yes, of course. This is important because he gets also a direct entry with Klopp. And Klopp is the one who can really convince that kind of player. You know, he can speak to them. He can get this human part that can touch Lavia, knowing a bit how Lavia is as a person, his behavior, also the intelligence of all his family. You know, Lavia is not someone who is coming from the hood or something like this. His family is all people from the high society, so they are really intelligent. They know how to make the things and something like this. So it's not just with money that you will get Romeo Lavia, okay. And this is important for Liverpool because if you think about money, it's sure that I think the Emeka Ubazi, the agent of Lavia, will bring a big offer from Arsenal in terms of personal terms. I was telling, and it's true, that they were close by talking about personal terms with Arsenal, and this is true, but Liverpool is there, you know, and he's saying, okay, we really want you, we think you are really interesting in our project, and the profile has been validated by Jurgen Klopp, and they also know that this profile, this is in terms of club, will be less expensive than maybe Manu Koné or Khéphren Thuram, and I don't think that Khéphren Thuram has a priority Liverpool, so this will play, you know, something really important, and the fact that Romeo Lavia has played so much minutes in the Premier League will play to get him a sort of step forward by Manu Koné, because Manu Koné is not yet a player, international player. So he plays for the youngster of France under 21. Yeah. But Lavia is yet already an international A, you know, with Belgium. So this plays also for him. And the fact that he plays at Southampton and in Premier League, in terms of vision for the scouts of Liverpool, has an advantage too.
You should celebrate yourself every day, but some days you should celebrate with jewelry. Whether you want to commemorate an unforgettable moment or just bring some added sparkle to your collection, Blue Nile can offer you expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com today and experience the ease and convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Thanks to Dan, and once again, thanks to Sasha and his excellent reporting. He was spot on, it seems, yet again. Speaking of transfer reporting, David Ornstein of The Athletic reports that Liverpool were interested in signing RB Leipzig's Dominic Szoboszlai. When that news broke, we do what we always do over on Red Men Plus. We leapt to action and recorded a Red Men Reacts. Chloe Bloxham was the host. I had the pleasure of being the guest on that show, and here's what we had to say on that one. The goals and assists is key. The versatility. He can play everywhere. Yeah, he can play both wings. He can play central. My guess is we're signing him to go into number 8.
Yeah.
One of those 8 roles.
what we've all been saying for a long time. Well, what do you do if Mohamed Salah doesn't play?
Exactly.
He can go. He played the majority of last season at right wing. The year before, he was playing a lot at left wing. So he's got a lot to him. So it does. If I can understand the link. The link makes sense, and it's one I imagine, again, we were very quick in putting this show together, but looking at the buzz online and stuff like that, it felt like there was a lot of people, you know, in the camp of, yeah, he's a really good buy. And I would tend to agree with that. I think it would be a very good sign if Liverpool can get it.
Yeah.
It won't be easy. Newcastle are apparently sniffing around and all that kind of stuff. But for me, again, I go back to it, he ticks a lot of the right boxes. Pretty much all the boxes that you want, in fact. For what you expect from a Liverpool signing, I think he ticks pretty much all of them.
Yeah, and this isn't just one season. This isn't on the back of one season. He did it the season before. Obviously, he mentioned, you know, last season he got 10 goals and 13 assists. In 21-22, he played 45 games, got 10 goals and registered 9 assists. I mean, it's 2 games. Ever since he joined there, he joined in only 2021. And since he's been there, he's been a main man. And I know it's the Bundesliga, but the Bundesliga have really good quality. And he's been in the Champions League, like I mentioned earlier. Let's move on to more pros, and you hinted at it there. A massive pro is his extreme versatility as a footballer. And if we weren't just looking and identifying the age of him being really what Liverpool are after, there is something that Klopp's after more than anything, and that's a player who can do a job in 3 or 4 positions. Looking at it last season, he played as a right winger 24 times. He also played as a right mid 8 times, 7 games as a left winger, 3 as an attacking mid, and 3 as a central centre mid as well. So it's very clear that he's got loads of versatility. And since he actually, you know, across his all season, he's played 59 times as a central midfielder and 37 as attacking midfielder. He's even played centre forward once. It's brilliant to see. And it goes back to that box system that we're playing. Yeah, he's more attacking, but he's done the centre mid role before. If we really needed, you know, to drop Salah for a game, give him a rest, we talk about the fact that the AFCON's coming up, yeah, we won't have him. If we can makeshift him into this right winger and he can still be brilliant for us, there's so many positives with this deal, isn't there?
Yeah, and I think the AFCON's a really good point, actually. We are looking at the squad going into this season. I know January's a long way off, but you're looking at it going, if Egypt gets to the final and Salah's away for a month and a bit, who's our right winger? And you're looking at the options now. Elliot might go there. Luis Diaz can go over there. Diogo Jota's gone there as well. I don't think any of those would be ideal. I think there's pros and cons. I think you put Szoboszlai in there. And wherever he's been playing, you go, listen, you're going to do a month and a half, mate, at right wing. And he'd be like, well, sound, I've just played like 24 or 25 games there last season. No problem. I also think, you know, it's a path well trodden. Salzburg to Leipzig, yeah, to Liverpool. Like, he'll be schooled in the way, you know, in the way of Liverpool playing. He'll be able to do the high tempo, the press and stuff like that. That's one thing I think, you know, we've signed players from that club before, and one of the reasons Liverpool do it is because they know they're used to it. It's not the same, obviously, because everyone's got their slight differences, but there's a general acceptance that the styles are pretty similar. Yeah. What's expected of certain Leipzig players is also expected of Liverpool players. And, you know, Ibu Konate comes from there, obviously, Naby Keita. We've been there, we've done that. They tried to get Timo Werner, similar thing. So they obviously like the Leipzig schooling as well, and rightly so. It looks like, yeah, a very good place for players to come through and develop, that Red Bull system. So, yeah, it just makes a lot of sense. The money is the money. I don't know where we're at with the money thing. Like I say, the £60 million feels...
seems a lot.
It does, but then it also, you know, makes amounts going for similar.
Yep. And he's younger.
He's a bit younger. Even the contract situation isn't as bad as Mason Mount. Now, obviously, you pay the English tax on Mason Mount, and I understand that, but like...
He's also chose Manchester United. Liverpool were in for him, and he's just decided to choose Manchester United over Liverpool. Jürgen Klopp won't want that mentality. We now no longer want you. If you chose someone else over us, you can go there. We won't come back in for you. But another interesting factor, and I'll ask you where you would play him, and later on I'll ask you, if we did sign him, what your midfield would look like, obviously with Alexis McAllister also in there. The positive is, at central midfield is actually where he's been the most creative. In 59 games as a centre mid, he scored 15 goals and registered 24 assists. How many years have we sat here when we've been going for the titles and we've said we rely so much on our front three. And without Sadio Mane and Roberto Firmino, along with Mo Salah, and, you know, that front three, that was literally killer to anyone. They were so ruthless. Without that, we need to make sure that the goals that we've now lost, we can pick up elsewhere. And him getting that many goals and that many assists, as that centre mid, if he can play that box for us, it's just, it looks like he is the player for us, doesn't he?
Yeah, and it's interesting because you're right. What I would say is that, like, I know you agree this, so I might be preaching to the choir, but I think we've all got our doubts whether Luis Diaz is going to get the volume of goals that Liverpool lost from Sadio Mane. Salah will score, so don't worry about Salah. Gakpo, is he an upgrade on Firmino? And maybe Jota, I don't know, time will tell. Yeah. But you're right, you want to take the burden off some of those players. Liverpool, you know, Mohamed Salah scored bags full last season and Liverpool was still rubbish. Yeah. You could do with another couple of players getting in there on there as well. So that's the main positive from Slobber's life for me, is that the fact that he looks like he gets into those areas. I think that if we are going to stick, and again, presuming we're going to stick with the five attackers effectively, the two behind the three, they're going to be closer to goal. You want someone there who's comfortable with that. That's why I've heard a lot of people say, get Trent up there. And I was like, no, even if Trent's going in midfield, I still want him deeper.
Yeah.
I want him. He's not really a natural in those areas. So for me, but Slobberslide looks like he knows he's in and around the box. He knows what it likes to score goals. He knows what it's like to assist goals. So again, that's a huge, huge positive. In terms of where I think he'd play, that's the beauty really, is that who knows? Like my guess is, I don't know what the plans are, but you could see a world where it's a DM for now, say Fabinho, with McAllister left eight, Slobberslide right eight, and then you've got Harvey Elliott, you've got Curtis Jones, you've got Thiago, you've got Jordan Henderson, you've got Stefan Bajcetic, you might get one more like a DM rather, a Lavia or whoever else it is, and all of a sudden you're like, there we go, because effectively what Slobberslide could become, Chloe, is like, he's what Oxlade-Chamberlain was. He was a midfielder who can play wide, and it's up to you where you pick him. But the returns you get from having Slobberslide over Oxlade-Chamberlain is obvious. You know, Oxlade-Chamberlain was never going to double-digit goals, double-digit assists. I take into account that he's done it in Germany, and it might be different coming to England. I do, but in general, a goal scorer is a goal scorer. I think that does translate. There's a familiarity with being in and around the box and putting the ball in the back of the net. So I think there will be certain games where, you know, Liverpool, if you're expected to go and you're expected to win, and you want to, you know, break down a team who might be coming to sit deep and defend, well, then you do go all guns out and you put McAllister and Slobberslide behind Salah, Gakpo, Jota, or whoever it is, pick whatever, Nunes, whoever, and you go, right, there's five lads there who look like they can get the ball in the back of the net. That's a far cry from at times last season when it was, you know, it was Harvey Elliott, Jordan Henderson, James Milner, they never score. They never score goals. None of them do, really. Elliot should, and maybe hopefully will, but the others don't really do it. Even Thiago doesn't score many. He scores screamers, but he doesn't score consistent goals. So all of a sudden, there's more lads on the pitch who look a goal threat. It's what City have been brilliant at. You know, behind whoever plays up front for them, whoever plays wide, Gundogan and De Bruyne can score in any game. Any game whatsoever. They're playing in those effective, the two in front of Rodri, and they're always a goal threat. That has not been the case with Liverpool. Jordan Henderson, Thiago, Elliot, Milner, Curtis, maybe we'll see at the end of the season yet, but in general, his record for Liverpool goal scoring wise isn't great. Therefore, there's a clear night and day between those. I mean, there's a lot of differences between those two sides, but that is one definite one. Is like, if Mo Salah has a bad day, I fancy us. Yeah, well, the more lads you can get on the pitch who negate that risk is a huge positive.
Yeah, you mentioned Harvey Elliott there. Let's look at some statistics then. For progressive carries, Slobberslide obviously has played a lot more games, a lot more minutes. He's played 4,182 minutes compared to Harvey Elliott's 2,469. But his progressive carries, is 93.9% in comparison to Harvey Elliott's 87.4%. His forward passes is only 33.6, where Harvey Elliott is actually 70.2. His forward pass accuracy, however, is a little bit better. We've got key passes, though, and is a massive jump. Slobberslide is on 97.8 compared to Harvey Elliott's 83.6. And we've spoke about Harvey Elliott and us not knowing where exactly he fits into this system. He's by the stats, I mean, he's 20, and these stats aren't that far off a lad who we're all sat here saying is 60 mil. So it's actually looking really good for Harvey Elliott as well. But the key passes is extremely important. The 97.8%. I mean, that unlocks teams. And I think when we signed Thiago, a lot of people thought he would be the pre-assist, the kind of player who can unlock the door for that player to then pass and get the assist. And having another person like that in our team, but also a person who defensively, his defensive actions is just slightly better than Harvey Elliott, that is another plus. It's someone who can unlock a door, and we know how much teams love to sit behind and sit deep between against Liverpool, especially at Anfield. To have someone who just makes that many key passes, it's going to give us more options on the football pitch, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And like I say, I think we're all enthused by Harvey Elliott, but we haven't quite figured out what he is yet.
Yep.
Whether Jürgen knows, whatever, he's been played in a few different roles. You are right. It's like Liverpool are lacking a little bit of that. We've always said for a while now, Liverpool's creativity comes from the fullbacks. Well, if we're not going to play fullbacks anymore, then someone else has got to do that. You know what I mean? And it worked. Robertson and Alexander Arnold, people who say, oh, Liverpool need more creativity in midfield. It was like, well, both of these lads are getting double-digit assists all the time. Yep. The way we play is either the fullbacks assist or the strikers assist each other. Now, we haven't got those fullbacks anymore. Trent Alexander-Arnold is effectively going into midfield. Andy Robertson's playing as almost a de facto left centre-half. Yep. Well, someone else is going to have to take the strain of that, take the pressure off that. So, again, it's another reason why. I don't know if worry is the right word, but like trying to piece together Liverpool's thinking in the transfer market can often be very, very difficult. But there are certain things that when they appear, it just makes sense. And this just makes sense for a whole lot of reasons. It suggests they might fancy sticking with the box midfield,
yep,
more than a 4-3-3, where you're thinking maybe he isn't exactly the ideal person to do that role. But this one added on to McAllister, added on to the linking Liverpool with the Thuram or Alavia, you can see the dots connecting there, and all of a sudden, what looked like a little bit, a couple of days ago when Ed's were falling off, it looked like Liverpool haven't got a clue what they're doing. It might have. They might not get this deal done. But it looks like, when David Ornstein reports it, Paul Gorse reports in the Echo that there's apparently been a meeting with his representatives. Like, this feels legit. It feels like there's definitely something in it, and like I say, it makes a lot of sense, and it should be putting a lot of smiles on faces. I think it would be a transfer signing that would excite a lot of people.
Thanks to Chloe for being a wonderful host, and hopefully you enjoyed my answers as well. Apologies if it was a little bit too much of my voice, but you're going to get more of it shortly. Sorry about that as well. Again, we mentioned before, didn't we, Transfer Insights. As soon as anything breaks, we go straight and get as much information from the people who know everything about players or deals or that kind of stuff. Dan Club jumps straight on the phone to Liverpool.com writer Ben Bogzak. Now, Ben's Hungarian, of course, as well, knows his Hungarian football very, very well. He's got Hungarian roots, rather, and let's put it this way, he's a big fan of Dom Szoboszlai, and he thinks Liverpool should sign him, and I'll let him explain in this clip why he thinks just that.
I wanted to ask you as well, you've alluded to some of his strengths throughout our conversation, obviously, and I wanted to really nail down what are his key characteristics, what are his strongest attributes, but also I wanted to get any weaknesses from you as well, because by the sounds of it, he doesn't have loads, but if there were areas of his game that can be developed further, stuff that Jurgen Klopp might pinpoint and say, oh, we can improve that, what would you say they were as well as his strengths, please?
Difficult to find weaknesses because he's been in such good form at the moment. But I think the only thing I would say is sometimes I would like to see him make more sort of shots. And I know he's got a lot of goals already, but sometimes he gets in a positions where you're confident he can take the shot on, but he doesn't necessarily take it on, but instead passes to a teammate. So I think, as a midfielder, I would like to see him in the box a little bit more to get on the end of chances, mm-hmm, from open play. And I think that's about it. I think defensively, he's improved on his game a lot. That was certainly something that I think he physically needed to improve a bit more when he went to the Bundesliga. because I remember he played against Liverpool at Anfield, and back then he physically wasn't quite there to the standards. But you know, he's grown a lot since then. He's matured. He was only a teenager when he was playing it in that game. He's matured and grown a lot since then. And I think physically he's definitely there now. He's capable of standing his ground in the Premier League. In terms of his strength, like you mentioned, I've listed them already, but I think like I said, his work rate is underrated. That's something that stands out for me. He's someone who works a lot in the team. Obviously, he's got an incredible technique in terms of his shooting, but his passing and creativity as well. He ranks quite highly. I think he's among the best in terms of creating chances in the Bundesliga as well. I kind of compared him to De Bruyne before, and I think CIES, who do loads of statistics around that, they a couple of years ago said he was most similar to Kevin De Bruyne as well. So I think in that sense, I think he can be Liverpool's own De Bruyne if he joins. That's the player I think he's closest to in sort of similarity. Another thing is just his sort of overall speed. People don't tend to see it as much, but he is someone who can run fast, and I think that's going to be a strength if he joins Liverpool as well.
Absolutely. And if you're anything like Kevin De Bruyne, we'd be doing okay. I was going to ask you actually in a minute, who are you comparing to? I know you've already used the Gerrard comparison, but Kevin De Bruyne, it was interesting. Before we spoke, I went on FBref, which I always use for player comparisons, and they've got statistically in their top 10 were names such as Bruno Fernandes, Fede Valverde, and Michael Olise, three names we're all familiar with for various reasons. Do you see why those comparisons would be made as well?
Yeah, I can see that. I think just they're all offensive midfielders who, you know, contribute a lot in terms of going forward, but also track back and put their work rate in defensively. So yeah, I can see that. But yeah, for me, I see more of a De Bruyne in him than necessarily Fernandes. But, you know, FBRF has their own data points, so I'm sure they'll know their stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I wanted to ask you as well, slightly left field question, I suppose, in many senses. I wanted to know what's he like. So who is he like in terms of the players we've already been linked to? Because obviously we've seen links to like Thuram, Manu Kone, Gravenberg, Gabri Vega. It feels to me, and you've already said he's going to fit that right-sided attacking eight role. So is this instead of Gabri Vega, would you say? Is he better than Gabri Vega? He's certainly further ahead in terms of his development. And I suppose, out of the names we've been linked with, would this be the one you were most excited about as well?
It's a tough question because I can't be biased. I have to be biased on this. obviously, I'm going to be most excited about this name being linked. I think, you know, I like Manu Kone and Thuram as well. I think they'd be great fits. I did a piece on Liverpool.com talking to their academy academy manager, who worked with both of them at ACBB when they were there together. Yeah. So obviously, I'd like either of those two. But I think for me, the big issue with Liverpool going for both Kone and Thuram and then also having McAllister is if you look at where all of those players play, is on the left-sided midfield role.
Yeah.
And we've only really been linked with Gabri Vega in that right-sided midfield role. So I can only compare him to Vega because that's the only comparison you can sort of make, because we haven't so far targeted any other right-sided midfielders. And I think personally, I've been against this policy because I think we need a right-sided midfielder as well. And obviously I can't complain with the player we're supposedly having talks with now, you know, because I think he would fit that role perfectly. And yeah, I think that's he would fill a position that we very much need sort of strengthening in. And I think, you know, we kind of looked at Mason Mount as well, who could potentially might have played in that role. I think although he prefers to play on the left side as well, but it's that side of that type of player, the more attacking midfielder rather than an all-round box-to-box midfielder or a defensive midfielder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. We've spoken a lot about his development and how impressive he's been, even in the Bundesliga, which in its own right is obviously a very high-class league. He's in the top five in the world, essentially. I wanted to ask you whether you think he's ready for a move such as this. Is he Premier League ready right now? You've spoken about how he's developed physically and he's more robust now. He's more capable of sort of standing up to the physicality of football matches. Do you think if this move was to happen this summer, he would walk into the Premier League quite comfortably?
Yeah, I think personally as well, he's been speaking about this, you know, where he feels like he's open to a new challenge and he's kind of ready for a new challenge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, certainly he's proven this season that he can be one of the best players in the Bundesliga already. So I think he's ready for it. He himself feels like he's open to a new challenge. That's why his agent is having meetings with the likes of Liverpool and the likes of Newcastle. I think obviously the Premier League is appealing to him because it's the best league in the world. And, you know, although he's spoken about previously looking up to Cristiano Ronaldo, so maybe like to play for Real Madrid in the future, but it's really difficult to go to Real Madrid or Barcelona. So I think the next natural step is to go to the Premier League, and it makes sense to go to a club like Liverpool or a club like Newcastle. And you know, I think the key thing is he's looking to make a long-term move at the moment. He's not just looking to, you know, sign for a club for a couple of years. He is really, that's why he's taking his time and he's being really careful with his decision, because he wants to make a long-term, he sees his next move as one that is going to be, where he's going to be in for a while, not just, you know, in terms of on the pitch, but off the pitch as well. So that will be his decision-making too, in terms of where he would like to live, and you know, I think all of those factors come into play. I mean, obviously the finances too, but you know, we'll see how Liverpool can live up to that. And it certainly seems positive that Liverpool are holding talks with his agent, and yeah, we just have to see what happens.
Yeah, fingers crossed this one can happen. It's one we should all be very excited about, I think. Just a couple more, Ben, before I let you go. I wanted to ask you, normally I ask you whether, or ask people whether a player would improve Liverpool and if they're sort of ready to fit into a Jurgen Klopp system, et cetera, et cetera. But we know he's ready for this system and we know he'd improve the Liverpool that we've just seen. So I wanted to ask you whether he would improve the Premier League winning Liverpool side. Like, is he that good? Like, if we were to sign him at our peak, is he still a player whereby he'd come into our squad and we'd all be very excited about it? Because it's easy to get excited about a player now, given the season we've just had. But is he of a level whereby he would improve us at our very best?
That's a tough question. I mean, who did we have in midfield? We had Henderson, who was really good, I think, that
Henderson
season.
Henderson, Wijnaldum, Fabinho, yeah. Really, wasn't it?
Wijnaldum, yeah, yeah. But I still think that midfield wasn't that good, you know? Like,
it was workmanlike.
Yeah, we had a players who could come in off the bench as well. I mean, the likes of Lallana. But I think, yeah. I mean, obviously, not the Sobosay who was playing then.
No, yeah, now.
For Salzburg.
Yeah.
But now, for sure, I think he could come in. Maybe if he came in then, he wouldn't be a starter, for sure. He'd have to work for it and prove himself first. But, you know, having him come off the bench, I think that's what I really liked about him as well at Leipzig, when he wasn't necessarily starting under Tedesco. He was coming off the bench, getting goals, getting assists, you know, making an impact. And I think in that sense, yeah, absolutely. I mean, if he would come into that side, he could still get goals, he could still get assists and elevate Liverpool to maybe beating Atletico Madrid in the Champions League.
I'm playing goal, can he, as well.
And that was the last clip. So, yeah, if you enjoyed this show, like I say, please consider going over to redmenplus.com. You can get them all in video or in podcast form. You can get them downloaded into your native apps as well. So it's all there for you in a nice little package. You can get them wherever you want them on the go, these shows in audio form. Like I say, if you head over there now and sign up as well, you'll be able to watch all three episodes of Bobby Firmino, The Best in the World, featuring the likes of Jordan Henderson, Jamie Carragher, Ian Rush, Adam Lallana, Peter Moore, Ian Ayre, and loads more guests from Hoffenheim, guests from Brazil. It's been an absolute belter of a series. So if you do want to go over there and check it out, then please do. Right then, I'm going to stop talking because you've heard plenty of my voice today. Do check back next week for another episode of the Red Men Weekly podcast. We'll see you all then.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.